ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, entitled Divinity and Divine Service, text number 8. Dharmasvanushtithakum sam Vishvaksena kathasu yaha Mutpadaye diyadiratim Shrama eva hi kevalam Dharmaha Occupation. Sunushtita. Executed in terms of one's own position. Pumsam. Of humankind. Vishvaksena. Personality of Godhead. Plenary portion. Kathasu. In the message of. Yaha. What is. Na. Not. Utpadayed. Does produce. Yadi. If, pratin, attraction, shrama, useless labor, eva, only, he, certainly, kevalam, entirely. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Purport. There are different occupational activities in terms of man's different conceptions of life. To the gross materialist who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing beyond the senses. Therefore, his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Concentrated selfishness centers around the personal body. This is generally seen amongst the lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in human society and centers around the family, society, community, nation and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Above these gross materialists are the mental speculators who hover aloft in the mental spheres, and their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy or propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness limited to the body and the mind. But above the body and the mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Because foolish people have no information of the soul and how it is beyond the purview of the body and the mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. The question of the satisfaction of the self is raised herein. The self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply with emolument of the body and mind. The body and the mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled. Simply by cleansing the cage of the bird, one does not satisfy the bird. One must actually know the needs of the bird himself. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord. And any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they may belong to, cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. The gross materialist can practically see that his material gain is limited only to time and space, either in this world or in the other. Even if he goes up to Swarga Loka, he will find no permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unnitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this verse it's mentioned that whatever duties we are performing, whatever occupation we are in, or however we are situated, that it's actually meant to lead to attraction to Krishna Katha, or attraction to the messages of the Lord. If it does not end in that, then it is Shrama Evahi Kevalam. It is simply a waste of time. So as it was mentioned in the sixth verse, Savaya Pumsam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radok Sajay Haituki Aparatihata Yayatma Suprasidati. So in that verse, like the definition of Bhagavatam of pure devotional service is given. And the supreme most dharma or occupation is described. So we come across this term dharma a lot, especially those who are from India. From the beginning of their lives maybe, they have been hearing this word dharma, dharma. So we need to understand what it really means. So it's interesting, Prabhupada, one of the definitions of dharma is the intrinsic nature of something. So like the nature of sugar is that it will be sweet. Chili is it is hot. Water means liquidity. So in verse number 6 in the purport, Srila Prabhupada translates dharma as that which sustains one's existence. So, in other words, whatever our conception of life is, then we will try to sustain it. So, dharma is basically of two types. There is paradharma and there is swadharma. So, there is the supreme occupation and then there are occupations for the body. So the supreme occupation is basically the process of devotional service. The supreme occupation is to understand that we are the spirit soul within the body, and not only that, but we are part and parcel of Krishna, that we have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and to engage in activities in relationship to Krishna, or to engage in the 9 items of devotional service. That is the supreme occupation of the living entity. So then there is the Svadharma also, or the occupations which are based on the body. As it is said here, the way Prabhupada opens the purport by saying, there are different occupational activities in terms of man's different conceptions of life. So depending on what conception of life we have, we will have a certain kind of occupation. So when we come in contact with matter, we become conditioned. Therefore we identify with the gross material body and with the subtle mind. So the conceptions of life of a person who is conditioned will be based on these two platforms or these two levels. So we see different people have different conceptions. Someone is saying, I'm a man, I'm a woman, or I'm a student, I'm a professional, or I'm a married man, I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grihastha. So like this, in this way we see there are so many occupations which are based on our different conceptions of life. And then we act in a certain kind of way. So the Vedic system is actually to recognize our material differences and how to engage that in the service of the Lord. So therefore we see the Vedas are very, very broad. Even in the Vedas, we find that material dharma, swadharma is also described along with the ultimate occupation of the living entity. In fact, most of the Vedas deals with fruitive activities. And then the essence of the Vedas is presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, according to one's occupational activities, one will have a certain kind of dharma. And even we see that for this very reason, the Varnashram dharma is created by Krishna. Krishna says, Chatur Varnyam Maya Shishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. So, because we are conditioned, we will have a certain kind of nature. It is not that everyone is equal, materially speaking. Spiritually speaking, we are all equal. We are the spirit soul, one in quality with Krishna, but different in quantity. So, but materially speaking, we are different. We are not the same. So, everyone doesn't have the same abilities or talents. Even if you look at our bodies, they are different. And even Prabhupada's time, many feminists would come to Srila Prabhupada and say that, you know, how come you're saying that women are different to men? You know, women have the same rights. We are equal. So, but if you see, we are not equal. You know, men and women are different. A man cannot produce a child. So that means we are different. So the Vedic literatures actually recognize these differences. So as these days they say, everyone is equal, but that's actually not a fact. Everyone is different. We have different bodies, therefore we have differences. So everyone has a different kind of nature. Some people are very intellectual. Therefore Krishna says there are these four classifications in society. There's the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. And then there are the four ashramas, which are based on one's nature. So some people are the head, the intellectuals, and whereas others are there are administrators who like to govern. And then there are those who like to engage in various activities for economic development. And then there are those who help the other three orders. So therefore everyone is different, and but the Vedic literature, they recognize these differences and try to, the whole idea behind that is actually to the whole idea of Varnashram is actually to gradually uplift the living entity towards God consciousness or the absolute truth. So we see that but the difference between Sarvadharma and Paradharma is that a Paradharma cannot be changed. That is the intrinsic nature of the soul. So by nature, we are servants of God. This fact cannot be changed. But whereas we see our material occupations or Dharma, they change all the time. And as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he mentions that how generally that there's a difference between dharma and religion. Religion equates to faith. So in other words, faith can be changed. So today, we are a professional. Tomorrow, we can be a student. So today, we are, materially speaking, a master. Tomorrow, we can be a servant, materially speaking. So our material occupations change according to the time, according to our different conceptions. Whereas our true nature never changes. And even we see in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna talks about these two dharmas right from the start of Bhagavad Gita. So he tells Arjuna that you are actually a Kshatriya, and he preaches to Arjuna on different levels to get him to fight on the battle of Kurukshetra. So he says, okay, I mean, the highest reason is, okay, you do it for me, Krishna says, because I'm telling you, you know, you're my servant, you do it to please me, that's the highest level. But he actually begins off by saying, first he says, how we are not the body, we are the soul. So you still got to fight, because in reality, you can't kill your friends in opposition. So they in reality, they won't die. It's only their body which is going to be finished. But then he says, as a warrior, you're a Kshatriya. So that is your nature, that is your Swadharma. And therefore you should, if you don't fight as a kshatriya, if you renounce the battle and you go to the forest, you'll engage in nature anyway. And we, it's even seen when Arjuna was in the forest, when they lost the gambling match, they were in the forest, they were killing so many demons anyway. Because that is the very nature of a kshatriya. So they have to administrate control and they have to engage in warfare. So he said, if you don't fight, then as a kshatriya you have to fight. That is your very nature. And infamy will be worse than death for you. So we see that even, in other words, that the swadharma, that the swadharma is actually temporary and it changes. And it is only limited to this body. So we have a certain kind of nature because we have taken birth in a certain kind of body. Tomorrow we'll take birth in a different kind of body and we'll have a different kind of nature. So those who are situated in the body of a female, we have a certain kind of nature. Or those who are situated in the body of a man, we have a different kind of nature. And even we see when Maharaj Yudhishthir, after the battle of Kurukshetra, he was lamenting for killing so many people. He was lamenting that he killed his brothers, his well-wishers, his grandfathers. Not only them, that he also killed so many animals. He was taking all that blame on himself. And no one could actually pacify him. Vyasadeva tried, Krishna tried, he could not be pacified. Then by the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, Krishna said that Bhishma Dev, he's on the battle, he's lying on a bed of arrows. So why don't we go and visit him? So then everyone went to visit Bhishma Dev. That was the arrangement of the Lord to show that how that his devotees are so exalted that even when they are in such an aggrieved state, because all these arrows were, they had pierced right through his body. So if we are struck by a pin, we are in so much pain. But here Bhishma Dev was struck by arrows and they were pierced through his body. And there was like, he was just lying on a bed of arrows. And there was like, you see the picture in Bhagavatam, there's so many wounds. And Krishna wanted to show how his devotees are in such sound shape that they can speak even at such a kind of time. And we see even Srila Prabhupada, even in the last stages of his life, he was actually translating his books because they are beyond the body. So then they all went there and Bhishma Dev spoke to Maharaj Yudhishthir and he convinced him that this is all happening by the inconceivable potency of time. And so that basically it's not his fault. And then Maharaj Yudhishthir inquired into the essential principles of religion. So Maharaj Yudhishthir inquired into dharma. And there Bhishma Dev described different kinds of dharma. So he described dhanam dharma, the dharma of giving in charity. Describes three dharma, the duties of a woman. Then he described raja dharma, the duties of a king. And then he even described varnashram dharma. So, in other words, because we have a gross material body, it has certain kinds of needs. And so those needs have to be taken care of. Of course, we are a spirit soul and the soul has its own needs as mentioned here. But at the same time, we are stuck in this material body. So therefore, we have to take care of both the needs of the body and the soul. But ultimately, the needs of the soul are more important. And then the needs of the body are secondary. And they are actually... the needs of the body are secondary. But in modern civilization, they are placing great emphasis on the needs of the body. And they have totally forgotten what the spirit soul is because of a lack of knowledge or ignorance, as it is mentioned here. That when our conception is based... when our occupational activities are based on a different conception of life. So because they have forgotten the needs of the soul, they have exaggerated the needs of the material body. But all that is not leading to any kind of happiness. It's not leading to any kind of satisfaction. So from day one we are educated, you are this body, gross material body, and the aim of life is to satisfy the body in whatever way you feel gives you happiness. So different people have different conceptions. Some people find happiness through the functioning of the mind. So some people like to propagate different kinds of philosophies and theories and isms, as it's mentioned here. Or some people get happiness by stimulating their intelligence. But there are others who get happiness by sensuous pleasure. So in this way, everyone is trying to satisfy the needs of the body, but because they have forgotten what the real self is. Based on the conception of what the self is, we try to satisfy it. And it's mentioned here that we see that this is also prevalent amongst animals. So animals are engaged in basically four things: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So the difference between, as we know, the difference between an animal and a human being is that a human being can take over to religion, or a human being can try to understand who am I, where did I come from, where am I situated, and where am I heading. In other words, they can take up to higher studies. But an animal cannot do so. But an animal is simply engaged in personal sense gratification. Or we see even in animals, sometimes there is extended sense gratification. And the mother of a tiger or a dog, she might be concerned about her puppies. Or the tiger might be concerned about her cubs. So in this way, there is extended sense gratification, but to a very limited degree. But they are mainly concerned about themselves. You know, food. When will I get food? When will I get my next meal? When will I mate? And how can I sleep? But human beings can inquire further. But in today's civilization, they are simply concerned with how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend better. But even we see that there are different kinds of religions in the world. And in most of these religions, they are actually motivated by sense gratification. Therefore, even in the Vedas, we have dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So people engage in different kinds of religious ceremonies or religious activities with the aim to gratify their senses. As Prabhupada mentions in the second verse to the in the purport of the second verse of the Bhagavatam, that man takes to religion when he can satisfy his senses. So therefore people go to church, give me my daily bread. My dear Lord, give me my daily bread. Or people come to the temple and pray, bow down, and you know, as we saw, do different kinds of things. But the whole idea is to gratify the senses. It's to ask for something to satisfy the self, which is the body. But in today's society, when people can get those very things without going to God, then therefore they reject God. And therefore we see that all these so many temples and churches are vacant because people can achieve sense gratification through economic development. They do not have to go to religion for that. Before, people were a bit pious, so they used to go to God to beg for sense gratification. But now they say, you know, kick God out of the picture, we'll just get a job. I'll just serve my boss and he can give me whatever I need. So why do I need God? And we see even the communists did the very same thing. They said, why are you praying to God? They brought a truck which is full of bread. They say, you pray to us, we'll give you the bread. So that's the very same thing. So when man is motivated by sense gratification, they take up to mundane religion. But that does not actually really satisfy the soul. And we see even when Srila Vyasadeva, because he was feeling very compassionate for the suffering souls of Kali Yuga, due to his perfect vision, he could see the future. So when he saw into the future that in the age of Kali, people will be very faithless, things will be very degraded, even matter will lose its potency, land will lose its potency, the cows won't give enough milk, people's minds will be very agitated. And so he thought, how can they make spiritual advancement? So he was contemplating on the banks of the Saraswati at Badrikashram. And he was contemplating, then he thought, I'll divide the one Veda into four. So people can basically purify their occupational activities. And then he divided the one Veda into four, and he gave that job to his disciples and grand disciples, and similarly different branches of knowledge came forth. And then he also compiled the Mahabharata for Sri Shudra Dhritabandhunam. He compiled the Mahabharata. Because the Vedas, to understand the Vedas, one needs to be a Brahmana, or one needs to be in the mode of goodness. Only then can one actually understand the Vedas. Of course, there are some people who claim that I'm born in a Brahmana family, therefore it is my birthright to understand the Vedas. Whereas those of you who are not born in a Brahmana family, you can't understand. But then there's the other group who says that, you know, this is not fair. Just because we're not born in a Brahmana family, therefore we can't understand. So even we can understand. But the point is, whoever is situated in the modes of passion and ignorance, there's no scope we can understand the Vedas. One needs to be situated in the mode of goodness. And in this day and age, the mode of goodness is practically nil. It's not existing. It's non-existent. As Devamrita Swami was mentioning that, it's actually a compliment to say that, to use this word, the mode of goodness. It's just the two modes of nature. It's the modes of passion and ignorance. So where is the scope for people to understand Vedic knowledge? So therefore he compiled the Mahabharata. And even compiled the Vedanta Sutra, which is the end of Vedic knowledge. And after doing all of that, for the welfare of all living entities, all aspects of the living are covered, still he was feeling some kind of dissatisfaction in his heart. And then he sat down in meditation and he was contemplating the very cause of his dissatisfaction. Now, unless one has spiritual knowledge, one cannot find out what the cause of dissatisfaction is. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, it is very difficult to discern what the cause of a dissatisfaction is. When we are covered by the modes of nature, we cannot find out why we are unhappy. Of course, we'll try different kinds of things, and the solutions to the problems are also mistakes, and they lead to more problems. And they cannot find out the root cause of the dissatisfaction. Then Shri Narad Muni, his spiritual master, he came and he pointed out that, because he chastised him in an indirect way, he said that, aren't you happy by identifying with the body and the mind as the objects of self-realization? And he said, because you haven't described the spotless character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore you're not happy. Because you have given more emphasis to the Swadharma. You have given more emphasis to Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. And you have delineated on the impersonal Brahman. And therefore you're not happy. So if Vyasdev is not happy, what to speak of other people? If Vyasdev, who's an empowered incarnation of Krishna, he's not happy by writing the Vedic literatures, then what to speak of people who are reading all kinds of mundane literature? How can they find any happiness? There's no scope. If he's saying, I'm not happy. So he delineated on the impersonal Brahman. In other words, one who achieves the Brahma-Bhuta platform, to maintain the status quo of the Brahma-Bhuta platform, they need to hear the glories of the Lord. Otherwise, they will come down to the material platform. It's like you're climbing out of a well with a rope. But the moment you stop and want to see, you know, what's around the well, how far am I up and want to see down, and you want to take a break. Because you're not climbing out of the well, you will go down. You can't maintain that position. So simply getting stuck on impersonal Brahman or level of God realization is not sufficient to that is just the beginning of happiness. That gives one satisfaction because the miseries have stopped. So that gives a sense of happiness. But if we want to experience transcendental bliss, then we actually have to hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then Narada Muni told him, because you have delineated on this subject matter, you are not happy. And he advised him to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. So then, what is the scope for people who are engaged in reading crow-like literature? So it's mentioned that those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord are compared to places of pilgrimage for the crows or for the pigeons. Here we have a lot of pigeons. In Australia, the crows are quite big. So we see in the bin, all the pigeons are hanging around, or the crows. Especially you see the crows in India. Wherever there's garbage, the crows are there. And they're very expert. The moment you throw the garbage out, they just make a dive, you know, into the rubbish pile, and they take out the rubbish and eat it. But swan-like men or devotees, they take pleasure in reading transcendental literature. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned everyone has this propensity to read. And we see the bookstores like Dimmock's or Borders or huge bookstores, and there is like so many books there, hundreds and thousands of books in one bookstore, and it is simply, it's all junk literature because it is not describing the glories of the Lord and it cannot give one any ultimate benefit. But the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita is being read for thousands and thousands of years, and one can derive satisfaction from it, because these glories of the Lord are non-different from the Lord. So therefore the perfection of all dharma should lead towards attraction for the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as this verse in Bhagavatam, Atha Pumbir Vibhash Shreshta Varnashtama Vibhagasha Swanushtitasya Dharmasya Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. So this will come next, that, O best amongst the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste division and the orders of life is to please the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, whatever occupation we are engaged in, back then in the days of when Varnashram system was intact, whether one is a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha or sannyasi, or brahmana, kshatriya, shudra or vaishya, one's occupations should please the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, because we have this material body, these occupations are required in society. So the social order is compared to a body. The brahman is the head, then the kshatriyas are the arms, the vaishyas are the belly, and the shudras are the legs. So these four divisions are required. The head is required. If you don't have a head, there's going to be chaos, which we see today. So the arms are required. But whatever occupation one is engaged in, it should lead towards Krishna consciousness. One should become a devotee at the end of the day. If one is simply engaged in one's swadharma, like for example, if one is a brahmachari, one follows all the rules of brahmacharya, you know, in a pakka way, but at the end of the day we are not a devotee, we don't have attraction to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or we don't render devotional service, it's shrama eva hi kevalam, it's just a waste of time. Or if one is engaged in the duties of grihastha ashram, maintaining one's family very nicely, but if one doesn't end up becoming a nice devotee, it's all a useless waste of time. So similarly, whatever occupations we are engaged in now, whether one is a student or a professional, or in between, one needs, the whole point is that we should have enough time so that we can engage in the glories of the Lord. Engage in hearing and chanting. Otherwise, it is a waste of time. So, the beauty of Bhakti Yoga is that we can engage in an occupation and still be Krishna conscious. Whereas in other systems, one's spiritual life and work life is like two separate things. But Bhakti Yoga integrates your work life, your makes everything your spiritual life. So like, and we see with Arjuna, when externally speaking, Arjuna was fighting. So on the other hand, Duryodhana is fighting, Dushasan and all the opposing parties, they're also fighting. And Arjuna is also fighting. Externally it looks the same. But the motivation with which Arjuna was fighting was totally different. Arjuna was fighting out of devotion, out of humility, as an activity to please Krishna, because Krishna wanted that. But whereas the other party, they were fighting to please themselves. So in Bhakti Yoga, one can engage in one's occupational duty and at the same time make spiritual advancement. And then also, as Krishna says, yat karoshi yad ashnasi, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, you do it for me, do it as a sacrifice. So the whole reason Krishna performs his pastimes is basically to attract a mind and heart and consciousness to him. That's why he performs all his pastimes. He comes down to this planet. And it is said that Cheto Darpana Marjanam, a mind or heart is actually compared to a mirror. So when we stand in front of a mirror, we can see ourselves. So our mind should actually reflect our true self and Krishna. But at the moment, because our mind is contaminated by matter, it is only reflecting this dirt, all our anarthas, it is reflecting that. So by engaging in this process of hearing and chanting, that gradually cleanses this dirt. And then we can see our true self. So Srila Prabhupada said that if we don't engage in this process, I was reading a lecture to this verse by Srila Prabhupada, he was saying that if we don't engage in hearing and chanting, all these temples will close down. He's saying the reason all these other churches are closed down because there's no hearing and chanting going on. So he said if you stop this process of hearing and chanting, it will all close down. So that is what gives the life to the devotees, by hearing and chanting. And hearing and chanting should translate into devotional service. If one is hearing and chanting very nicely, they will naturally be very inclined to engage in devotional service. So for devotees, we have this process of sadhana bhakti, which is our real occupational service. So we start off by adav shraddha. We have some faith. When we have some faith and respect for devotees, we come in the sangha of devotees, and then we associate, our faith gets stronger, then we take shelter of an advanced devotee or a spiritual master, then we take initiation, we follow the instructions and engage in the process of bhajna kriya. And after, when we engage in that sufficiently, properly, then all the anarthas from the heart disappear. And then we actually attain some steadiness. And then after that we attain some taste. So what this verse is talking about, attraction for the message, is it is talking about having a taste which is spontaneous. So at the moment, we are coming to Bhagavatam class out of duty or out of fear. But one should reach to the point that where we hear these glories out of spontaneity, out of attraction, natural attraction. And that is the sign of an advanced devotee, that they actually, we see even Krishna is attracted to his own glories. Krishna is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would hear some pastimes from the Bhagavatam, he would go into ecstasy. But when we are in the process of sadha bhakti, we are doing it out of duty. Because we are still endeavoring to get that taste for Krishna's glories. Therefore, sadha bhakti is an injunction. It is a rules and regulations. You do this. Why? Because you should do it for your own good. So the spiritual master gives the injunctions from the Vedic scriptures how to engage in the process of sadhana bhakti. So at the moment, maybe we come in class, we are thinking, you know, when will this class finish? When will he stop speaking? So I can get on with my day and have my breakfast. But we see Maharaj Parikshit, he was so attracted to the glories of Krishna that for 7 days and 7 nights, he was in rapt attention, in rapture. He was hearing these glories non-stop. He did not bat an eye, you know, he was just constantly hearing. So, but the sign of an advanced devotee is like, if they miss a Bhagavatam class, they'll want to know what was spoken in that class. You know, I came late, what was spoken? Or I missed the class, you know, what did that Prabhu or Madhavi say in class? Or for us, it's like, sometimes it's like, okay, who went to class? We want to find out. We didn't go to class, but who was there in class? So, but advanced devotees, they actually take great pleasure by hearing. It's like sometimes people, when they miss a TV show, you know, they want to, or when they miss a TV serial, they want to know what happened in that show. So, what's the famous TV show here in Australia? Neighbours, okay, you know. So if you miss an episode of Neighbours, then they want to know, oh, you know, what happened in that episode. Maybe I can catch another one. They show it another time on TV. At midnight they'll show it, so I'll stay up and find out what happened. So like that, we should be eager to know the glories of the Lord. We missed one class, actually, what was spoken in that class. And even Krishna, when Mother Yashoda, she would recite to the Lord different pastimes, and when she would recite the pastimes of Lord Ram, Lord Krishna would hear with great pleasure, with full attention, and then he would inquire to Mother Yashoda. And once she was mentioning that how Lord Ram was sent to the forest for 13 years, and there Sita Devi got kidnapped by Ravana. And then suddenly then Lord Krishna, he just jumped up saying, Lakshman, get me my bow and arrow. Let's go. Let's get Sita Devi back. So even the Lord takes pleasure in his own pastimes. And even we see King Kulashekar, he was a devotee of Lord Ram. And every day he would have someone would recite the pastimes of Lord Ram every day. His guru would recite. And he would take great pleasure in that. And once his guru recited the pastime of Lord Ram, where he ended up, he was in a precarious situation, where Lord Ram was single-handedly surrounded by 14,000 demoniac soldiers, and he had to fight all of them. And then suddenly King Kulashekar jumped. He said, you know, if I'm a true devotee of Lord Ram, I should go and actually protect him. And he said, okay, come on, my army, follow me. We are going to protect Lord Ram. And then the ministers thought, you know, what is this here? So what should we do? And then the ministers sent an advance party. So they sent an advance party, and they decided, they'll tell King Kulashekar when he's approaching towards the battlefield that Lord Ram single-handedly defeated everyone. So when King Kulashekar is going towards that spot, and then his other soldiers are coming back, they said Lord Ram has defeated everyone. And then he said, okay, fine, that's fine. And then he came back. And in this way, he was pacified. And the ministers that decided, we won't read the pastimes of the Lord where he's in a precarious position, otherwise the king will go out of control, because he's in so much rapture and ecstasy. And then once the guru couldn't make it for the recital, and he sent his son instead. So his son didn't know all these protocols, and he basically again read a pastime of the Lord in which he was in a precarious situation. And then again he went. So in this way we see even that devotees, the point is that they take pleasure in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. And all our occupational activities should lead to this attraction. So the reason we are engaging in all these services so that we develop an attraction for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So I'll stop here and see if there's any questions, comments or corrections. Yes, Mother.
So the point I have one of those quite a senior devotee. I just didn't know how to relate to that. You were speaking about reading Bhagavats and right, and about attachment to Bhagavats, and so devotee said that, well, you know, some people are readers and some people are not.
No.
I've read Bhagavatam once, so fine. Like I'm not that much into reading and it's okay.
Mm. Let me paraphrase the question. You're asking that.
How would you, react to that, or how would you, reciprocate with this person and in general?
Okay, I'll try to explain from what I've understood. She's saying that, correct me if I'm wrong, that this devotee is saying that they've read the Bhagavatam once and that's enough.
And that.
So some people are readers, therefore they can read again and again and derive a taste out of it, whereas I don't like to read, so, yeah. Actually, if you read further on, it's mentioned, Shushrusho Shadudhanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipraha Punya Tirtha Nishevanath. O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By such service one gains affinity for hearing the message of Lord Vasudeva. So actually we all should be attracted about hearing in Krishna's glories through the Bhagavatam or a class, because that's our natural position. But because we have this material contamination, therefore we don't have this propensity to hear. Rather we want to hear our own glories. That's what we are attached to. So if we are not, if we don't like to hear Krishna's glories, or we say that, we've read it once, that's enough. That means we really don't have that taste. And in order to get that, as is mentioned in this verse, one should serve the devotees, the great devotees, Mahatsevaya, those who are engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. And when we serve the Vaishnavas, we actually get a taste for reading these books and hearing. Otherwise, one can't do it. It's just not possible. These books are not easy to read. It's like my uncle, he's a doctor in Melbourne. And materially speaking, he's very qualified. Materially speaking, he's quite mature. Has a lot of experience of life. And he knows about politics and what's going on in the world. He knows his medicine in and out. But he has difficulty reading Sri Upanishad, which is such a small book. It has, 18 mantras. He said, this is the most heaviest book I've ever tried to read. So, because if we have this material contamination, these books are not easy to read. Even personally speaking, first time I read Bhagavad Gita, after reading one page, I just put it down. I couldn't understand a single word. Gopal Guru Prabhu gave me that Bhagavad Gita, my god brother. And I came back and gave it to him here in the temple. I said, you take this book back, I can't understand a single word. He said, no, you keep reading it. Keep going. Then again after a week I came back, I said, I can't understand. He said, keep reading. And he said, eat prasadam. So we have to actually purify ourselves before we can understand this knowledge. So by you know, taking remnants of the Lord, and by somehow devotees will try to trick people into engaging them in service. So when they are engaged in service, after doing a lot of devotional service, some of our dirt gets cleansed and then we achieve a taste. We can see even now, to the degree we are engaged in the service of the Lord, to the degree we'll develop a taste, and it's a loop. It goes on like that. So it feeds in. I don't know if I've answered. Probably you'd like to add anything. Anything else? Yes, probably.
Nandana Prabhu, you discussed nicely chanting, dancing and feasting. But performing is for the one step.
I don't know if I discussed this.
This mood is to spread Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Goshanandi and
Bhajanandi.
Okay. So, we have to, his one purpose main is to preach whatever we understand, whatever we hear.
Yes.
Preaching is the
essence. Prabhupada said. That's right. So, in order to preach first, we have to be strong ourselves, and then we can preach. So, whatever we know, we should share it with others to the best of our ability.
You have done very well, actually. Not interested in Gita, and then you left the job and became full son brahmachari.
But I'm not a brahmachari anymore. Those days are gone. Yeah, Prabhupada is strict as well. Yeah, so the brahmacharis are here. The brahmacharinis are here. Yeah. Anything else? Yes, Kashmir.
Two part question. First is, in this day and age, what's the importance of discovering true occupation in Chakshuru?
That's a nice question.
Within the confines of Krishna consciousness, what's the importance of discovering the service which is most suited to us?
Okay. So, very nice question. So, first question is, can you repeat it?
What's the importance in this day and age of Kali? What's the importance of discovering
a true occupation? Okay. In this day and age of Kali, it is said that everyone is born a Shudra. Kalau Shudra Sambhava. So, the social system of Varnashram is non-existent in this day and age. So it is not fully possible to revive it. So, in Krishna consciousness, we take elements of Varnashram which will facilitate our devotional service or hearing and chanting. So like if we take all the rules of Brahmacharya or Kshatriya, Brahmana, it's not possible to engage in all of them because the environment is so degraded. So the main thing is whether we have Varnashram or not, we should. Of course, it's good to have it. Good, even Prabhupada emphasized that to develop Varnashram Dharma, to develop Varnashram community, so that devotees can be, we should be engaged according to our nature. So the duty of the spiritual master is to find out what kind of nature you have, what kind of propensities you have, and the spiritual master will engage you accordingly. But establishing Varnashram Dharma as it was in the days of yore, that's not possible. So we just take elements of from the Shastra which support our Krishna consciousness. Like even Brahmacharya, we don't follow it rigidly as it was prescribed before. We just take aspects of Brahmacharya and apply them in the modern context. But the whole idea is that devotional service is at the forefront. And these things just support devotional service. Does it make sense? Yeah, you have to be engaged in devotional service according to your nature. what your nature is. So whether you like to, different devotees have different natures. Some devotees are very brahmanically inclined, so they have to be engaged like that. Some devotees like to manage, they have to be engaged like that. Others like economic development, so they have to be engaged like that. But this point is, do it for Krishna, whatever your nature is. Of course, when we are in a temple situation, still it is the responsibility of the temple authorities to engage you according to your nature, give you services which best suit your nature, so you can be very optimum. Especially when we join the temple, even we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when people would join, he would get them to wash the pots and to test their sincerity. Then after a while, he would engage them according to their nature. So sometimes we have to just do the needful, whatever is required by the organization. But at least in the long term, we should be engaged according to our nature. That way you'll be better situated in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. But it's not possible to establish Varnashram anymore. It's just things are too degraded. Okay, we should stop here. Grantharaj Shreem and Bhagavatam Ki, Prabhupada Ji.